Uchu prayed. Anandvitam. Wonderful. Te, your. Bhagavan, O possessor of all opulences. Vicheshtatam, activities. Yat, which. Atmana, by your potencies. Charasi, you execute. He, certainly. Karma, to such activities. And the Ajase, you are not attached. Vibhutaye, for her mercy. Yataha, from whom? Upasedahu, worshipped. Ishvarem, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Namanyate, are not attached. Swayam, yourself. Anuvartitim, to your obedient servant Lakshmi. Bhavan, your lordship. Translation. The sages prayed, dear Lord, your activities are most wonderful. And although you do everything by your different potencies, you are not at all attached to such activities. You are not even attached to the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by the great demigods like Brahma, who pray to achieve her mercy. So you can repeat. The sages prayed.
Dear Lord,
your activities are most wonderful. And although you do everything by your different potencies, you are not at all attached to such activities. You are not even attached to the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by the great demigods like Brahma, who pray to achieve her mercy. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord has no desire to achieve any result from His wonderful activities, nor has He any need to perform them. But still, in order to give an example to people in general, He sometimes acts, and those activities are very wonderful. He is not attached to anything. Namam karmani limbanti. Although He acts very wonderfully, He is not at all attached to anything. Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, text 14. He is self-sufficient. The example is given here that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is always engaged in the service of the Lord, but still He is not attached to her. Even great demigods like Brahma worship the goddess of fortune in order to win her favor. But although the Lord is worshipped by many hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, He is not at all attached to any one of them. This distinction concerning the exalted transcendental position of the Lord is specifically mentioned by the great sages. He is not like an ordinary living entity who is attached to the results of pious activities. Rishya uchu anandvatam te bhagavan vicheshtitam yadatmanatarasi hi karma dajase vibhutaya yata upasedur ishvarim namanyate swayam anuvartitim bhavan. So, omagana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmiritam yena tasmai shigurve namaha. Big crowd. So when I first read this verse several years ago, I felt pain from reading the verse because I was thinking, you know, Lakshmi loves him so much. And here's Krishna just saying, you know, I don't care for you. In other words, detached, you know, he's not attached. That's actually a negative, not attached. Not attached. Anyway, so I was thinking about that. And then a God appears to be very, like, what, heartless and just like, you know, just like almost like an impersonless, basically. He's not attached. And I said, poor Lakshmi, she's worshiping this god. It doesn't have no attachment to him. Oh my God, maybe I'm in the wrong movement. So I was thinking like that when I read that. But then I began to think about what attachment means and the different contexts in which you can understand the word attachment. I mean, words are actually understood in context, not outside of context. And actually, words mean something according to what culture someone is in, too. Just like I was thinking about the word bad. Like, when I was young, if you said someone was bad, they were bad. But nowadays, if you say someone's bad, they're good. Did you know that? That's from Michael Jackson. Anyway, did you know that? If you say, he's really bad, that means they're good. And when I was young, if someone was good, we'd call them cool. And nowadays, if you call someone cool, they can't understand what you're saying about it. He's cool, huh? That means he has no emotions. I mean, what does it mean, cool? He's really cool, dude, you know. Anyway, so words are definitely understood contextually, and not only in the context of where they appear, but in the culture in which they're written and everything like that. So Prabhupada uses the word attachment to refer to material attachment. And then what is material attachment? It's very interesting. Material attachment is basically that I'm attached to something or someone because of what they do for me. You know, I need them. It's an ontological sense. In other words, that part of my existence is I need that particular entity to exist or carry out my particular functions in life. You know, I just need it, just like... And of course, the upshot of attachment is that one becomes, you know, crazy, lusty, and then angry. I mean, for example, I'm attached to my computer. That's a material attachment. Uncle's using it in Krishna's service. And it's not love. I mean, Prabhupada uses the word attachment to actually contrast with the word love. You know, if you look at Prabhupada's writings, you know, in love you don't really want something from someone. In attachment you really want something from someone or something. So I want something from my computer. And what happens when it doesn't produce? I get angry with it. And ultimately I throw it away and trade it in. So that's material attachment. You know, and you know, the attraction between men and women is such like that, or between, you know, any material attraction that, you know, he really turns me on, or she really turns me on. You ever hear that expression? That's from the 1960s also. Mm-hmm. Turn me on. Man. Come on, light my fire, you know, anyway. Do you ever hear that statement? Anyway. You know, so that's really what Prabhupada is indicating here. Not that Krishna is just heartless and has no, let us use the word spiritual attachment for Lakshmi, but that Krishna doesn't need her to fulfill his desire. So that's real love. Real love is when you don't need someone, or someone is not fulfilling your needs, and you still love them. Or you're still like, let's not even use the word attachment. You still have affinity for them. Or you're still focused on, you're still thinking of them. And so, anyway, so just like Krishna. All right, so Krishna is called Aptakama. That means he gets all of his desires fulfilled without anybody. He doesn't need anybody to do it. And a perfect example of that is when Krishna was in the form of Naranarayan Rishi. And Naranarayan Rishi, he was meditating. That's the twin sons of Dharma. He was meditating in Bhadrik Ashram. And Indra thought, you know, he needs something. You know, this poor sage, he's meditating, you know, he doesn't have anyone to love. It's like that song in the 1960s, you need someone to love, you want someone to love. So he needs someone. So let me send some nice, pretty girls from the heavenly planets for him, you know, entertain him. you don't need some entertaining. You know, what is it? Sage meditating in the Himalayas, you know. What sort of fun does he have? Isn't it? You know, what does he do for his jollies? That's another 1960 word. So he thought, well, of course, he was thinking, let me deter him from his meditation. That was his actual motivation. And sometimes we see the people, apparently they appear to be our well-wishers, but their motivation is to deter us from our meditation on Krishna. So anyway, so Indra was the same. His motivation was, you know, these twin sages, they're meditating, they're going to become powerful, they're going to want to take over my position. That's Atmavat Manyate Jagat. That means he's projecting his own mentality on them. He's thinking, why else would people meditate other than to get heavenly planets? You know, there's no other reason. He doesn't have that in his consciousness. You know, as people project their own consciousness, they think, you know, I mean, sometimes like in ISKCON or the periphery of ISKCON, you get the Ritviks. And they're projecting their mentality on the gurus, and they're thinking, you know, why else would they be guru except, you know, just to get money and followers and everything like that? You know, because they're thinking, you know, if I was guru, I would be doing it for that purpose. But little do they understand, a lot, you know, a lot of us had a lot more money before we joined the Hare Krishna movement. You know, a lot more fringe benefits, you know. You know, we were eating raw food before we joined the Hare Krishna movement. Anyway, whatever. So that's called Atmavat Manyate Jagat, when you actually think that someone's doing something for the same reason that you would be doing it in that circumstance. That's improper role playing. Anyway, so Indra, he sent these apsaras along with, you know, springtime, because you got to have nice breezes and everything to feel romantic. You know, if it's a storm or, you know, it's just like really hellish and there are demons outside, you can't be too romantic in that situation. Because lust is so bad in the material world, people could sometimes be romantic in any situation. Like I remember in New York, there was the blackout, and then many more children were born as a result of that. Anyway, so we sent forth these beautiful apsaras. I mean, they make the earthly girls look like worse than frogs, like cockroaches, you know. You know. So he sent the apsaras, and they were dancing. Aloha, hey. No, that's Hawaiian. Anyway, they were dancing something, you know. Whatever they were dancing. And the breezes, you know, like the... Like we have our nice jasmine flowers like that, you know, so you smell the jasmine flowers or something. Breezes and flowers. Just like sometimes we get notes from someone and then we smell the note, it smells like perfume. Anyway, so... or it has flowers on it. So he was... So Narada Narayan Rishi, they just basically yawned at the whole thing. They said, hey, what's this? Huh? And, you know, Cupid was there, and he didn't have too much effect. And they said, well, they realized, you know, the demigods realized we made a big boo-boo. That's a mistake. And they felt very remorseful. Narayan Rishi, he produced so many varieties of girls from his own body, especially this girl, Urvasi, who was actually like, she's like the pinnacle of all the apsaras in the heavenly planets. I mean, ain't no one better than her in the whole material world. Because she's created by Narayan. And, you know, she came out and Narayan said, take one of these girls back with you if you want. You know, you can have them. So they understood, wow. As Prabhupada would say, the confectioner is not really interested in, like, getting sweets from anybody. Like, if you have a whole candy factory here, you're not going to go to Walmart to buy candy. Isn't that? It's like one of my friends in New Zealand. He has a candy factory. So he takes me there and see all the candy is being made. Because they lost interest in candy after seeing how it's made. You know, they show the candy canes, how they're stretched out like this and everything like that. So, you know, he's not going anywhere to buy candy. In fact, if I want candy, sometimes I get candy from him, not for myself, but to give out to children, I just go to him. He doesn't come to me. That would be stupid. I go to him. So anyway, so Krishna is the source of everything. Hamsa Rasya Prabhu. I mean, everything is just springs from, but a spark of his splendor is described in the Gita, in the 10th chapter, all these wonderful manifestations. So, you know, Krishna doesn't need anything. And so let's say if one day the goddess of fortune goes on strike, I mean, she won't do that, but if she just says, you know, Narayan, unfair to me, we want more pay, then Krishna just says, all right, he can manifest more goddesses. She won't do that, obviously. I mean, I'm just being hypothetical. I mean, it's just like, many years ago, the controllers in the airports went on strike. So what did the government do? Just hired a whole new batch of them and kicked the union people out. I don't know if any of you remember this, you know. It was several years ago. It happened. So, and they lost their jobs. So Krishna's like that, too. You know, if you go on strike, forget about the goddess of fortune for right now. Like, if you go on strike and say, you know, Krishna, you're not going to have anything to eat today. Then Krishna says, yeah, you lost your service, but I'll still get something to eat. So anyway, that's the point. You know, Krishna is Swarat. He's independent. He's the perfect independent person. So that's one side of the equation, you know, that he's not attached for what he gets from someone. But there are stories about how Krishna is very attached to his devotees. And I was reading one story, it was Radharani's appearance day. So there's this interesting story about what's called the Prema Sarovara. Prema Sarovara means like the lake of love. That's interesting. Very romantic. So anyway, this story illustrates that Krishna's attached to Radharani. What happened is that Krishna and Radharani were by this nice lake, the Kunda, and this big bee started to bother Radharani. You know, it was like the other day, I think it was, even Radhasami, there was a big bee on the altar, wasn't it? It was this big. I was thinking, this is arranged just on, did you notice that? I said, Radharani is arranging this just on her appearance day. This gigantic, you know, creature has come, appeared. It was actually big. It wasn't like a little tiny bumblebee.
It came with a flower outfit.
It came with a flower outfit, yeah. So there was this big bee that was flying around Radharani. And, you know, generally we don't like bees flying around us because they do have something at the end of their body that's not so pleasant, which is the stinger. And some of us have been stung by bees and have to take, you know, injections and everything like that just to stay alive. So she was scared. And then what happened is that Madhu Mango, Krishna's Brahmin friend, chased the bee away. Now, that in Sanskrit, the name for the bee, is Madhu. Madhu also means honey. This is interesting. So Krishna also has a name, Madhusudana, because Krishna is the killer of the Madhu demon. Madhu was also a name of a demon, the honey demon. It was interesting. Madhusudana means the killer of the honey demon. Anyway, so somehow or other, Madhusudana was honey. He must have stolen honey or something like that. So Krishna, Madhu Mango, so Madhu Mango means auspicious honey. That's another. Anyway, Madhu Mangal means auspicious honey. Anyway, so Madhu Mangal chased Madhu away. And so when he chased the bee away, he assured Radharani. He said, you know, this is very nice. He said, don't worry, Madhu is gone. But when she heard that, she actually started crying because she thought he was referring to, not Madhu Mangal, but he thought he was referring to Madhusudana, who's Krishna. That's the name of Krishna. And so Radharani, she started crying. Even though Krishna was there, she started crying, and so much crying, tears coming from her eyes. I don't know if any of you have ever cried. Of course, I'm sure you all did. But when you cry, you can't see in front of you. It's like, so she couldn't see Krishna anymore because there were so many tears there. And when Krishna saw her crying, then he started crying. And he couldn't see her. So he was crying, she was crying, big mess. big mess, a crying mess, emotional disaster. So they were both crying, and they couldn't see each other. They were they fainted, basically, crying. So what Vrinda did is she said to the parrots, you know, you got to wake them up, you know, you got to take them back to consciousness. So then the parrots started chanting, you know, either Radha, and some parrots chanted Krishna. Radha, Krishna, Radha, Krishna. Like that, the parrots were chanting back and forth, Radha, Krishna, Radha, Krishna. And they both opened their eyes and they saw each other and they were so happy to be with each other. So, I mean, if that's not attachment, I don't know what attachment is. But it's not this, even, you know, it'd be better to have a different word. It's prema. Forget about it. But even in the spiritual realm, there is attachment. Krishna is attached to Srimati Radharani, and he's attached to his devotees. Not only Srimati Radharani, but all of her servants, all the people who work under her jurisdiction, which is all the devotees. So, because, you know, who wants to worship a god who doesn't love you, isn't it? I mean, who wants to just love him and he's just like, huh? That would be horrible. You know, you just, I love you, Krishna, I love you, Krishna. And Krishna says, you know, cool it, you know. That wouldn't be much of a loving exchange, isn't it? You know, and Krishna says, oh, I have so many people loving me, you know, seen it, been there, done it, you know, huh? You know, just don't bug me. So, anyway, that wouldn't be a very pleasing relationship. But Krishna loves all of us. And an example of that, actually several examples have come to mind. One example of that is the Gopakumara story. What happened was that Krishna loved his devotee Gopakumara, a coward boy, so much that he appeared as Gopakumara's guru. He just kept going, you know, and giving him some hints in devotional service. He gave him the mantra, of course, the Gopal mantra. And then Gopakumara turned around and Gurudev left. And then he appeared at various times, Jagannath Puri and other places, just like, what happened with Gurudev? He just left. So that was Krishna. Krishna, and obviously with all of us, Krishna's in the heart too, and he loves us so much that he just stays in our heart and watches all the garbage that we do. Can you imagine that? You know, you're watching television, some garbage program, and Krishna's there watching, not the program, but he's watching you. Huh? I mean, just like, you know, someone gave me a film the other day, watched it for a few seconds. It was what the world would be like without it, people. That was the name of the film. I thought it would be interesting to see. So, people give me all these stupid films. So I turned it on and it showed what the world would be without people. Yeah, so this is boring. And I was thinking, Krishna's watching this thing. How can I force Krishna to watch it too? So in other words, Krishna's subjected to all this garbage that we do, and that's out of love, you know. I mean, just like an ordinary marriage, like if you got the husband watching football games or something, some stupid thing like that. Sorry. You guys are maybe watching. So, you know, and the wife just sits around and keeps serving him. I mean, without saying to him, you know, what are you wasting your human form of life watching football games? Like my stepfather, actually he watches football games all the time. And my mother said, you always is nagging him, you know, well, get up, get off your butt, and do something. And he's going to die watching football games. Anyway, so that'll be the hospice program. So, but Krishna's just like letting us do all these things. He just wants, and not only that, he's giving us facility. You know, if he's just like my mother going out and buying DVDs of football games for him. So Krishna gives it, Matak Smriti Gyanamaponam Cha, That means intelligence, forgetfulness, remembrance, so facility. You want to do this. He makes your faith strong. If you want to worship, like if you want to be a tantric and eat out of a skull. Yeah, they do that. They eat out of skulls, you know. They put their chia seeds in the skull. So, and then Krishna makes your faith strong. Whatever deity you want to worship, just like in India, people, it's the land of religion because there's every conceivable type of religion in India. I mean, you name it, it's there. You know, people worship, there's rat temples in India. Did you know that? There's rat temples where they let the rats, you know, they have a big rat on the altar. And then the rats come into the temple, you know, they're just crawling. It's solid rats on the altar. You ever see pictures of that? National Geographic. Can you imagine? Huh? A rat temple? You know, just, I mean, we try to get rid of course, we don't have any rats, but we try to get rid of or they have, probably have a cockroach temple, too, where they have a big cockroach in the temple and it's covered with cockroaches. I mean, every conceivable, imaginable type of worship of every conceivable thing they have in India. Because they've had freedom of religion. But also, you know, it's also Krishna just reciprocates. He allows all these different things to occur. So that's love. The Krishna is allowing it. You know, just give it patience. You know, one evidence of love is patience, right? That you're just patient. I mean, just like a mother is patient with a child. The child's, you know, little baby, and it's going to take how many years to grow up? God. When, you know, sometimes a mother's thinking, when will he ever grow up? It seems like forever he's been five. All right, so... so, but the evidence of love is that you just wait till they grow up. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't do that, you know, just wait, you know. I'd be checking every day, you know. I'm a little impatient. I check every day, you know. Huh? You grown up yet? So the evidence, yeah, anyway, so that's an evidence of love. So Krishna is waiting. So here's the case of Gopakumar. Gopakumar, Krishna appeared as a spiritual master. Krishna was waiting, waiting, waiting. And finally, when Krishna saw him, he came back to the spiritual world. Krishna ran to him. He was so happy to see him. Now, if that isn't attachment, I don't know what attachment is. He ran to see him. He embraced him. He fainted. All the devotees thought that Gopakumar had somehow or other, what, had some other, just like given poison to Krishna or hypnotized Krishna. You know, Krishna, close your eyes. Your feelings. And so, or somehow or other, he was a demon or something like that. And they didn't understand that Krishna loved him so much. He was so happy to see him back with him that, you know, that he fainted. I mean, that's love. That when you're so happy to see someone, you faint. And I've never seen that before in the material world. You know, because I go traveling in airplanes and people, you know, the loved ones greet them when you arrive at the destination. But I've never seen anyone faint. Isn't it? You know, John and Mary or whatever. So, they're so happy. Oh, and here's little Petunia or whatever. And but they don't faint. They're happy. They smile. And then they start fighting with each other about 5 minutes later, we're at the luggage, while they're waiting for the luggage. Why didn't you do this? What? You did that while I was away? But Krishna was so happy, he just embraced it. So anyway, there's a story of Krishna's attachment. Now, on the other hand, there's a story that may appear to contradict that. That when Krishna, this is also from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Krishna saw how Satyabhama was envious of the residents of Vrindavan. She was generally envious of the residents of Vrindavan. But she's also, I mean, this is also a pastime. I mean, you can't criticize Satyabhama. It's just like, Bhama means left-handed. Left-handed in India means not quite right. Not quite right. You know, something, like you have, you know, left-handed tantrics. There's left-handed tantrics, right-handed tantrics. Actually, incidentally, the President of the United States is left-handed. Did you know that? Yeah. You know, he plays golf the opposite way. The rest of us play golf. So, that's not bad. I mean, just Hare Krishna. But, so, Bam means left. Satya means truth. What? Obama, that's right. Never thought of that before. Obama. Wow, Obama. Thank you for making that point. Anyway, I'm one of his fans, so don't blaspheme him. So when she saw Krishna, how much Krishna loved the residents of Vrindavan, she got so upset, she started just like hitting the floor and everything like that. I don't know if any of you ladies ever did that. It's always a banging the floor. We had people here in the temple before got so upset they would bang the floor with their heads or put holes in the walls of the ladies' ashram. They got angry. We had to have a regular drywall person here before. So, it's true, we're not making this up. Mother Tulsi will verify that. So she started, you know, and Krishna said, you know, get up, you envious, whatever. And he said to her, you know, something really heavy. He said, actually, I don't love you. The only reason I got married to you is because you remind me of my girlfriends. I mean, that's a heavy thing to say to one's wife. And you remind me of my girlfriends in Vrindavan. And, you know, that's why. And, you know, actually, I never really wanted to get married, but I had to save this one princess, Rukmini, because, you know, they were going to marry her to Sishupal. She wrote me a letter. It's my Kshatriya Dharma. You know, I got to do my Dharma. But, you know, actually, I had whole plans just to be single the rest of my life, to be a brahmachari. And she spoiled it. And, therefore, I thought, you know, I have to get married one time, might as well get married several times. So anyway, so he said to her, actually, I don't love you, you know. And she saw evidence of that, too, because at night, even when he was sleeping in the bed, she would hear him crying out the names of his girlfriends. You know, Radha. Of course, she is Radha. Actually, Satyabhama is Radharani. She's an expansion of Radharani, and she's aware of that, too. It's interesting. She's actually aware of that. But these are just like dramatic performances when one goes on a stage. In the method acting school, they actually really get into their roles. I don't know if any of you studied acting in college. I did. You really get into, you know, you prepare yourself. You really get in. You know, I'm the Phantom of the Opera. Look at it. Or I'm. Whatever. One time I played Paul Revere. One if by land, two if by sea, you know, the British are coming. I really got into it. I thought I was Paul Revere. Anyway, so in any case, so she's really into the role. So Krishna made that statement. And of course, that doesn't mean he didn't love her. It was to arouse her anger. Even more, you know, just to make her more, you know, angry at him. And that Krishna enjoys, that's loving exchange. Krishna enjoys anger sometimes. His beloved getting angry with him. Because then he has to make, it makes it interesting for him because he has to make so many endeavors to connect with her again. Because then she refuses to see him and then he has to do all these tricks and he has more fun doing the tricks, you know. You know, really interesting tricks. You know, dressing up as a woman, dressing up as a man. I remember there was a story. I just read the story. He went into. He dressed up as like Radharani's cousin one time, and Radharani knew it was Krishna. You know it was Krishna because you know the gopis they actually took off. The clothes, and they saw that just had, you know, there were false things there where the body should be shapely. And so then Krishna just put him back in, talked to Jatila, complained that her cousin, his cousin, doesn't want to embrace him. And then Jatila says, you have to embrace each other, you know. So she forced Radharani to embrace Krishna. Krishna was thinking, this is so cool, you know. You know, I've got, it's so cool. I've got my beloved's mother-in-law forcing us to have a relationship. Yeah, she said, spend the night. You know, so anyway, so Krishna does these things, but there's no question that Krishna is not attached in a spiritual way, in a loving way, but not in a material way. That was the point I'm making. So therefore, that answers the whole question I had when I first read this verse, and I was shocked thinking Krishna was heartless. He's not heartless. He's cool, or he's bad. He's real bad. Anyway, so... What? That? Oh, Pat. Yeah. I'm never going to...